This episode of the Oh No 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 podcast is sponsored by Dynamic Industrial Services, the rope access specialists. As long-time Wraith Rover supporters, we are very familiar with ropey performances. But if you need a service that's more Sam Stanton than Willie Accio, look no further than DIS. Operating across Scotland, they specialise in working at height, offering maintenance, inspection, repairs, and more. So if you've got a problem at a height that even John Fredrickson can't reach, visit dynamicindustrialservices.co.uk to find out more. Avant-garde composer John Cage challenged the musical world in 1952 when he unveiled his best-known and most controversial piece of work, 4:33. As the title suggests, the composition lasts for 4 minutes and 33 seconds and consists of only pure silence. Some regard it as a modernist masterpiece, revelling in Cage's intention to force introspection from the listener. But critics regard it as a waste of time where literally nothing happens. Which begs the question, was Wraith Rovers 0, Greenock Morton 0 the most boring game you'll see all season? Or was it in fact a piece of performance art so profound that art historians will be lauding the contributions of Ian Murray and Dougie Emery for decades to come? Welcome back to the Oh No 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 podcast. And yes, we are struggling for content. Why do you ask? My name is Duncan Cameron, and joining me tonight to talk through 90 minutes of scintillating championship action and to look forward to Friday night's game with our broth, I have, first of all, I've got Blair Hopcroft. How are you, Blair?
I'm awake, just about.
Good, excellent. I've also got Carol Allison Smith. How are you, Carol?
I'm all right. Glad that last night's match was boring because I have no notes prepared for it, but I didn't really need them, I don't think.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And we've got Christina Beattie too. How are you, Christina?
I'm fine. One of the only four people in the world that want to talk about last night.
You can make that three
because I actually don't want to talk about it.
No, I think we're down a good couple. So we will have to talk about this game to some extent over the next, you know, 2 or 3 minutes at the very least. Blair, I think, I mean, probably one of the talking points in this is maybe talking about why it became the game that it did, almost.
Yeah.
So Ian Murray made 4 changes from the team that started down at Ayr United on Saturday. Lee Ashcroft coming out being obviously the obvious one, yeah, and the enforced one. And Ian Murray, I think, a pretty no-brainer choice to go in there. But changing kind of further up the park, he's brought in Aidan Connolly and Jack Hamilton and Callum Smith for Josh Mullen, Zach Rudden and Lewis Vaughan. Do you think that was maybe sort of one change too many, or in a week where you've got 3 games in 6 days, is that level of kind of switching around to be expected?
I think it's to be expected. I think it's also quite a shrewd bit of changing in terms of we're obviously going to get into why the game turned into what it did, but they're, as much as Dougie Emery will tell you that they're not, they're a big physical gang. And Lewis Vaughan is going to get kicked up and down that park all day. I don't really think it's needed. I don't think we need to risk him in the form that he's in. It was always going to be a battle. It was always going to be a contest. So Callum Smith is an obvious choice because he's a battler and he's a worker and he runs. I was a wee bit surprised not to see Josh Mullen, actually. In the sense that Yeah, changing the team around and stuff with a game on Friday makes perfect sense. But going up to Arbroath on what is likely to be a pretty heavy pitch, I don't think it's going to suit Josh Mullen particularly well either. I mean, yeah, set pieces might become important, but I was a wee bit surprised not to see him in just for his work ethic and his running and his kind of endeavour, which you saw when he came on actually later on in the game. But I'm going to do something that I never, ever in a million years thought I was going to do. I'm going to defend Jim Goodwin a little bit for a second, because I know that face. They were more of a gang than I thought they were going to be. I'm not kidding.
Oh, really?
Like, they were. It was like there was no attempt whatsoever to play any football. Like, and I knew they were going to be physical, and I knew they were going to chuck the ball into the box a lot, and it was going to be kind of harem scarem. But like, some of the tackles and some of the challenges and the kind of going up for headers and stuff, like at some points it was verging on comical. Like, it was actually bizarre. And you're watching that game, and I mean, Kai Katongo, what on earth? If you're talking about a boy who's been robbing a career, how is he a championship footballer? He's like a speedboat driver a speedboat with no driver. He just runs in straight lines and noises folk up. I mean, at one point he's feeling Kev's backside at a corner. Like, it was just dark arts 101. They were. I mean, I know we've joked about it, but they were worse than I thought they were going to be.
So I suppose there's two ways to think about it being worse at that. I was almost a little bit disappointed in Morton. I didn't think they were. I thought they were going to be better at it, if you know what I mean. Better at being worse. and I think a big part of that is missing George Oakley, because they've got their kind of two big units. And I think where they maybe went wrong previously was that Robbie Muirhead, they were kind of playing him as the striker. But then what George Oakley has let them do is he can be the big, you know, kind of unit who plays up front. And then Robbie Muirhead did what he did last night and kind of just rattles about whatever he wants, just kind of bashing into folk. And he's better at it because he's not, for all his size, he's not a great target man. But what happened last night, as you say, they'd played Jai Katongo instead, who's just, I mean, for lack of more detailed analysis, he's nae use. Like,
he's rubbish.
And I thought that they kind of suffered from that. And then it was all a bit obvious. Like, when both of your centre-halves have been booked inside the first 20-odd minutes, you're not doing big and scary very well. And I know Dougie Emery denies outright that they are big and or physical. But I don't know. I thought after kind of 15 games unbeaten, they'd be sort of more impressive, almost. And they had their injuries. I don't mean that in terms of the overall game. They were well worthy of the point, if either team was. But I kind of thought they would be a bit cuter and a bit more, you know, an iron fist and a velvet glove. But they really, there wasn't that at all. There was very little to kind
I
of
honestly
to.
Thought that they would be able to play a bit. Like, I thought it was one of those, you know, those things where no team's ever as good or as bad as a reputation that they come with, kind of thing.
Yeah.
I thought everybody goes on about, you know, they're a gang and they are, and they always are going to be. But I thought, you know, like, Dougie Emery goes on about how they're no big and physical, and they're obviously playing a bit of football. They're not at all. Like, it's actually, they were awful.
Yeah. So I will say that I saw them against Motherwell. And they played a bit of football that night. They were pretty decent. As I say, I was kind of disappointed with them. Carol, I mean, in terms of kind of narratives and you know, as I say, Dougie Emery's very upset whenever anybody suggests that Morton are just there to rustle a few jimmies. Do you think there's any justification to say that the Rovers maybe kind of read into that narrative a bit too much themselves? Didn't they get dragged into a fight last night? as opposed to maybe trying to play a bit of football themselves?
I just don't think Morton had any chance or gave them any chance to play football, even if they wanted to. Morton were not going to let them play. They came and they were literally using their head to stop the game, not using it by mental madness. No, just physically just bouncing it off their head. They were just... They're just hired thugs. Massive hired thugs dressed as minions. And there was nothing entertaining about that last night. And they made sure Rovers could not play. At all. It was just... Like Blair says, they were bad. I've written down in my notes here, there was... The highlights package of actual football was less than 4 minutes. And I put football in quotes because it was not football last night. At all.
Yeah. I think when we get beat by Airdrie in the Challenge Cup, we congratulated Ian Grieve on squeezing 7 minutes of highlights at it. I tell you what, I mean, that boy's doing some work to get 5 minutes out of that last night. I mean, I went through those highlights and took my notes, and I was about 16 words. Christina, give me your thoughts on. Whatever you like, really, to be fair. If you've got a talking point, I want to hear it. This game.
It's the same as what everybody else has said. I mean, they stopped us playing. There was absolutely no flow at all. I did like how we didn't just kind of let them rule it. I feel like we were standing up for ourselves last night. We held our own very, very well. And that's when I say hard fought. That's exactly what I mean. We definitely did give them... Not right away, but as the game progressed, we gave them a run for their money. And I just think the boys that played last night must be sore today. Like, they've got to be. They've got to be in agony because they just don't, as Carol said, they just don't play football. And it's very, very difficult. We are so different to that. And it's never a game that I look forward to when it's Morton because it's just not what I like to watch. It's not entertaining. But, I mean, I think we did fantastically well. And I think a very fair point to each side. I was more concerned and annoyed about the referee, but I'll get to that later if that's going to be a talking point between Blair and I think. that it's all encompassing, the refereeing and Morton as a whole is just not enjoyable.
Yeah, it's I think you can see with Morton. And I don't necessarily view this as much as a criticism as I think some people do. I said it in the pre-match, that if you're getting results, fair play, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. But that to a fair degree, they're playing numbers, football. They're doing... John McGlynn's
done it
in his first side.
All the time. Show.
That's what I was actually trying to say, thank you, Blair. They're playing the percentages. And you see it with... the long throws and bringing the left back over to the other side to take his long throws because it's like it's all you've got. And but I mean it's fine. It's still an extra chance. But again, when you look at the highlights that have been put together, that's basically all you've got is a couple of corners and a couple of set pieces, a couple of throw-ins. Sorry, but even then, there's no real kind of innovation quality in it. It's just we'll chuck this in and we'll see what breaks. And I mean, there's really not a lot.
Like, what is that? Like, to me, I want to know what that looks like in training because I don't like Dougie Emery either. So I'm like, what is he doing in training? How is he teaching this? It's just like, oh, here's the ball. When they get the ball, just hammer them. Like, I don't understand how that works, how that is a development of a team. What are you actually developing is the question.
It honestly wouldn't surprise me if his training looks very similar to everybody else's training and that he'll be working on passing and they'll be working on all of that stuff. And I genuinely think that he thinks they play football because they get the ball and they pass it from left to right across the back four, really loosely, by the way. I mean, some of the passes were dross, but they're going back and forward across the back four. And then they run out of ideas and then they run out of room. And so they lump it. They just horse it as far as they can into the box and play that percentage ball. Because at the end of the day, every so often you're going to get Keith Watson going up for a header like he did last night and it skews off his head and it goes in the wrong direction and it goes out for a throw-in. And all of a sudden, you've got a long throw, which is as good as a corner or a free kick. And they're lumping the ball, shelling the ball straight into the box again.
I think the other thing with that is like an on-form striker covers a multitude of sins as well.
Yeah.
And obviously they didn't have George Oakley last night, but it feels a bit like when Brian Graham hit his really hot streak under John McGlynn. And it didn't really change the way the rest of the team were playing, but suddenly everything looks so much better.
It does, Ian.
And it becomes much easier for everyone else. And I think one of the big failings for Morton, and I don't mean like they didn't fail last night, they got a decent point, we got a decent point. But we've said it a few times earlier in the season, where when we had Jack Hamilton, we'd play the ball long, and then Jack Hamilton would go off, and we'd still just play the ball long.
Yeah.
I think they played a fair bit of last night as if George Oakley was still there. Yeah. And you've got Jai Katongo instead. He's never, ever going to do the same thing. I mean, let me just recap what I've kind of scribbled down as highlights from the first half here. So I've got three. First one, it's a shot from kind of distance that Kev kind of pushes away. And this is not to take away from the goalkeeper. He definitely can't take the chance, but I think it's possibly coming back off the post or even going wide. So I'm not entirely convinced that counts a shot on target, to be fair. But the keeper gets down to it well, pushed that way. There's a penalty shout. Let's come back to that in a second, because really the only other sort of chance in the half, it's Jai Katongo who gets it. And the ball just gets kind of knocked down into the channel. It's off a corner, isn't it? It's off a Rovers corner. Rovers free kick. And it's James Brown who's covering and gets shrugged off, actually, kind of far too easily, I'm sure. Even he would think so. But he recovers very, very well.
It's one of them. He's running, because he's running across the pitch, I think it's like he misjudges how close, or either that, or Katongo kind of moves inward.
Katongo gives him just the slightest wee nudge.
But he effectively just runs straight past him. Like, he just runs straight across and goes, oh, crap, missed the ball.
Yeah, it's like kind of Wile E. Coyote style. Just,
yeah. But with Katongo's first touch, you're always going to get a chance to recover.
Well, that's what I was going to say, is if you're, heaven forbid, Jai Katongo, that's the only reason you're on the park, is to score that chance. Because that's all you can do, effectively, is run. And you get that chance. And even, let's give him a bit of credit. He does well, kind of with his movement, gets away from the defender, and can't even then get a shot away. You think, this is going to be 0-0. this is going to be nothing.
He is rapid.
Aye, in a straight line.
Yeah.
But yeah, even then.
He wasn't rapid in coming off when he got subbed.
That was really funny, actually.
Right, we'll talk about the referee. Just
can I start? Can I make a point? I've got many.
aye, go on then.
Right, first question is, who wants to be a referee? Who sits in their house and goes, do you know what? I think this is my career path now. I'm going to dedicate my life's work to being a referee. Because I totally get, by the way, what's the reward? What is the reward in that? I wish a referee, we need to get a referee on this podcast to answer that question. I totally get that, right? However, I think if you're a good referee, I shouldn't know you're there. Nobody should notice a referee. The referee should just be on top of the game. The decisions should all be as fair as they're going to get. And I think it's just a nice, flowing, easy game. My attention shouldn't be on him at all. My attention last night was constantly on this referee. I think if we all know it, the referee knows the kind of style that Morton play in. You need to get on top of that right from the beginning of the game, in my opinion. You need to rein them in. You need to be in control of it from the start. From the perspective of, if you don't do that, what's going to happen when you get to 70, 80 minutes in is it's just going to be madness, because all the players are going to get frustrated. You're going to have made all these wrong decisions. Aggression starts kicking in. Everybody's adrenaline starts kicking in because they're watching stuff that's basically unsafe and dangerous. If you're watching your teammate get tackled in a manner that's not acceptable and nothing's getting done about it, you're going to get hyped. And then there's more of a chance of a reaction to that. So I just think there was just, for me last night, there was no nobody was in control of that game, in my opinion. And I feel like the decisions sometimes on our behalf were wrong, on Morton's behalf were wrong as well. And I just think, how is it so wrong a lot of the time? That's my question, so, Blair.
Well, I was going to say, Blair, I know you want to come in on this. I'm going to ask you.
I really do. Stay
in your corner for a second. Just,
I will.
I think you want to make quite a general point. I want to just stick on this game just for a second, because actually, I feel like I've already kind of defended Morton a little bit. Now I'm about to defend referees. This is horrible. Real devil's advocate stuff, and I don't want to be the devil's advocate. But I actually, there was obviously a lot of people, like Christina, you're far from alone on this, a lot of people kind of getting stuck in the referee last night. And I've got kind of one overriding thing actually on that, is I think it was largely because nothing else happened, and you have to talk about something. Because going through the main kind of incidents from that game, so he booked both Morton's defenders, their centre-halves, relatively early on. The second one of those I almost thought was actually a little bit lenient. I thought that was probably the referee thinking, this is Morton, they're a gang, this is what they want to do, so I'm going to kind of clamp down on that. I thought Aidan Connolly's booking was absolutely fair enough. He was high, but he had absolutely no idea the guy was there. So it's the epitome of a yellow card for me, where it's reckless, his foot's off the ground, it's a booking. Callum Smith's yellow card I thought could have been worse. Just he was off the ground. I think it was a yellow, but again, you've seen them given the penalty. So at the time, from the other end of the ground, I thought it looked like a penalty kick, but the players didn't really seem to claim for it. And then I was kind of seeing people today as we were watching the highlights saying that they thought it was a penalty as well. Having now seen it, I'm not. I don't think it's a penalty kick. It hits his arm, but his arm's down by his side. I don't think you can reasonably expect. I think it's Lewis Strapp to get his hand out of the way there. I think if he brings his hand up, he's actually running the risk of knocking the ball and then conceding a penalty for it. I wasn't overly bothered by the referee in that last night. But Blair, as I say, I think you've been sitting on this for a while, I believe. And
Kind of. Last night, so I'm going to agree with everything Christina said. Absolutely everything. Except, I think he did a lot of what actually you're talking about, in that he booked the players early, and the bookings went both ways. And actually, he did take the sting out of it, because it got less physical as the game went on. It just never broke into a game of football. But see the stop-start and the lack of flow, that's 100% on Morton. Nothing to do with the referee. They're fouling. He has to blow his whistle. He can't just let the game run. Do you know what I mean? He can't just ignore fouls. That's the only way that game could have flowed. And actually, what would have happened is it had got really ugly really quickly, because, like you say, folk are getting tackled and they're no getting free kicks for it. My issue with all of it is, and it actually comes back to the very first point you made, which is like, who wants to be a referee, right? And I get it completely, because I didn't want to be a referee. But I tell you what, thank God somebody does, because we didn't have a game without them. And the bit that really gets me is, so I'm going to use Keith Watson and Dylan Easton as the two examples, both of whom I thought actually had a pretty decent game last night. So Keith Watson, for me, over the 90 minutes was really good, but he makes one big, huge glaring error, which is that header that comes over, and he completely misjudges it, and he looks like a complete and utter idiot at that point, to be honest with you. It's one of the headers that he'll not want to watch it back, because it's embarrassing for him. And then there's Dylan Easton. I think it's the second half, the ball comes down, and he tries to control it, and he just completely miscontrols it. The ball just runs away from him, and he completely loses it. So they're professional footballers. They're paid a lot of money to play football, and they make mistakes, right? Goalkeepers make mistakes and cost goals. And we talk about how, you know, goalkeepers get a worse deal than everybody else, because when they make a mistake, it's pointed out and stuff. If I was asked to make 300 decisions in an hour and a half, how many am I allowed to get wrong? Like, where does human error come in? Because that referee last night, I'd love to somebody to actually count how many decisions and fouls and throw-ins he had to give one way or another throughout that 90 minutes. it would have been a lot. And human error kicks in. And then you throw into that, because we are all human and we make mistakes. And he made mistakes last night. He absolutely did. And some of them were worse than others. And I'm not actually thinking he's a very good referee, for what it's worth. I'm not actually advocating that. But he's also got 22 boys out there trying to con him at every single avenue that they can. They are trying to cheat. They're all at it. Every single one of them. I mean, to go away from the Rovers for a second, you go to the Premier League, Ivan Toney taking a free kick. The referee turns round. He scoops up the foam, moves the ball, moves the foam and puts the foam back, and then puts the ball down and takes his free kick from like a yard further over from where he should. Like, these guys are paid a lot of money and they are cheating. They are actively cheating. And then we get annoyed at the referee when he gets conned. I'm like...
You know what I think is also the bigger picture here as well, is it's the inconsistencies with each referee. So the game shouldn't really be like... The game shouldn't be in the referee's hands in that we've got one referee one week that would make a decision that the other referee the next week wouldn't. It's just not consistent enough for me week on week. The referees are too different in how they and what they're allowing, what they're not allowing, which I think needs to be a tight thing that's tightened up across the board, in my opinion.
Do you know what the answer? Do you know what the answer to that is? VAR. That's the answer.
No.
But this is my point, Duncan. This is exactly the point I'm making.
I don't know what episode we're on, but we've managed to get this far and it's not come up yet.
I'm not advocating it at all. I don't want it. I never want it to be there. I love the mistakes. I love the talking about it in the pub after the game and the, was it a penalty? Was it no a penalty? Like, the job they have to do is really, really hard. And I get that we're going to give them stick. I mean, I was last night. I was on my feet screaming at the referee at points. Like, I'm not advocating that. I'm not doing that at all. I just think it's one of these things where, like, the narrative of last night that the referee was honking, I think is papering over a crack that basically it was a really, really bad game of football between two teams that did not play particularly well, one of whom had no intention to play, and the other just didn't manage to play for whatever reason.
Yeah.
That's my rant over.
The BBC have got the Rovers down as one shot on target, and I have to tell you, I cannot remember it.
Nah.
And that's not the referee's job. No. It's got Morton as four, and I mean, even then, Kev collected a couple of balls low down, but no shots were they in the name. I think you could have had a referee, you could have refereed that game perfectly, and it still would have been a terrible game of football.
Yeah.
100%.
Just while we're on it, this is just a point that winds me up during games, and I'm gonna air this grievance now. If a player goes off for a blood injury, if they are bleeding and they're sent off the park for that, they can't come back on until the ball is dead and they've been checked by an official. Now, whether that's a silly rule or not is neither here nor there. But dearie me, I can't do it anymore. I was stressed out my nut last night. Just listen to folk shouting and bawling, and then people start inventing rules in their own minds. So there was somebody near me who was like, it's 30 seconds he's got to get back on. He's had 30 seconds now. I was like, what's that? That's not a rule.
Do you not have Google that you can sort out these arguments there and then? Maybe that's what we need, is to help referees. It's like a top 10 idiot's guide to silly rules. So like the blood rule and any other stupid rules that people constantly argue over. Maybe we need like an app that is instant referee answers.
I think we should do that as a wee segment.
Yeah,
that's more or less what we're doing now, except we don't need an app or Google. I'm just going to tell you.
And we have to trust that you're correct.
Exactly. This is my preferred interpretation of the entire world, to be fair. Yeah. And I'm just choosing to impose it on this podcast as well. We'll save uncontested drop balls for another day. Or indeed, when the ball hits the referee.
That's my favourite.
That's the other one.
What's he stopping for? The ball's hit him. It's a drop ball. Can we just move on?
Give it back to me. I mean, because there are elements of those rules that I don't like. So there's the thing about whether the ball is in the box or not. And it doesn't matter which team is in possession, it goes back to the goalkeeper, but then there's all this judgment. It's nonsense. But that was one thing categorically. The people were shouting and bawling and calling the referee everything for.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's maybe that referee doesn't even agree with that rule, but that's not his job. He's there to follow it. And as soon as Ewan Murray went off, because he was bleeding quite heavily, actually, to the photo I saw this morning, bleeding from the mouth, he could never have come back on until the ball was dead.
No.
And actually, at one point, Dylan Easton kind of launched the ball up the park, but just kind of generally up the park. And I think sometimes you just need to be a little bit cleverer. Like, if one of your guys is off the park and it was a blood injury, put it out of play. Make sure you'll just kick it in a touch and make sure you can get them back on.
But Duncan, that's the other thing that Morton do to you. You can't put the ball out for a throw-in. So you've got to try and get it as far up the park as you can before the ball leaves the pitch. Because if the throw-in's anywhere from 30 yards out, you're facing a set piece.
That's a good point.
Like you're as good as giving away a free kick at that point. So you could actually see it. Everybody aiming for the halfway line. Yeah, really frustrating. And the other one that got me was when folk were screaming at the referee about how it was a head knock. And I'll be the first to admit, I was annoyed that the game wasn't stopped for Ewan Murray, who was lying on the floor with a bleeding face, holding his head. But the referee is following play. He's 30 yards up the pitch and hasn't seen that. That's on his assistant. The guy who has no job at that point other than to run to the halfway line.
They are mic'd up, aren't they? They can communicate.
Yeah.
They're all mic'd up and communicate. So there's
all
no
he has to do is say, got a head knock in the box.
Yeah.
The referee blows his whistle, goes back, and then you have an uncontested drop ball from wherever they've got it. It's just
there's definitely issues around that, and I think you hear stories about some referees, they only want the linesman basically doing offsides and throw-ins, that they're not too interested in being kind of collaborative and stuff, and that's a separate issue.
But I believe that's why they're mic'd up. So a guy I went to school and stuff with him, he's a PE teacher that I know, and he's a referee. He referees in the SPFL. And he was saying that the linesman's no longer meant to wave the flag because they're not there to make the decision. They're there to assist the referee in making the decision. So they're meant to speak through the mic and go, I think that's a foul. So that the ref can go, nah, I'm not giving it. Or, yeah, I am giving it. Whereas if he waves his flag, the whole crowd goes, it's a foul, he's given the foul. Why you no stop for the foul kind of thing?
But I think you see that problem time and time again. And so, I mean, a very minor incident down at Somerset on Saturday where the referee, so the linesman flagged one way and the referee gave it the another way. And just because it was right in front of us, the referee was wrong. So he'd overruled his linesman and he was incorrect. And so everybody was going tonto about it. But then on a similar note, Partick Thistle scored a very onside goal against Dunfermline last Friday night. And because it's a goal, as you say, like you're saying, the linesman doesn't kind of flag or whatever, but the linesman thinks it's a goal, he has to run to the halfway line, which is really good, the most obvious thing you can get. But he only got about halfway before he was in conversation with the referee. And then, again, ultimately, they got that dead wrong. But they were having some kind of conversation about, is it a deliberate action and all this stuff? Because they've made the rules far too complicated for everybody. But
they really have.
We really will do anything to not talk about this game against Morton.
We've already talked about everything that happened in the game. So
I've got one more note of a highlight in this, and what I've got written down here is
the final
best
whistle.
Chance. No, I've got the best chance of the game was a deflection that the man knows nothing about.
Yes,
that kind of shot and it hits off somebody and then goes wide, and that was the pinnacle of the football in excellence on
my
show.
Highlight was actually there was one moment where Scott Brown took the ball down about 25, maybe 30 yards out, and I thought he was going to shoot again. And just for that 1 second, I thought, oh, he's going to do it again. And he didn't, but that was pretty much as good as it got, that one moment of maybe he will. But no,
and everybody was just shouting, shoot, shoot. I'm like, that shoot. Man's never going to be able to take the ball there ever again.
Yeah, totally.
Right. I tell you, let's have a quick chat about Man of the Match then, because there was you know, there were some stronger performances in there. Carol, why don't you kick us off? Anybody in a Rovers jersey who particularly impressed you amidst the gloom last night?
I thought Liam Dick was having a good game. I think he's been, the last couple of games, I think he's really come out of his shell and been a little bit more present. I thought he did have a really good game. I would put Liam Dick up. I think he's done, going from a couple of weeks ago when everyone's going, Dicko's done. We're now, yay, Team Dicko.
Yeah, I thought he was very good on Saturday, and again, he was good last night. Christina, how about you? Who stood out from the crowd?
Actually, loved Liam Dick's interview as well on Saturday. Totally agree. He is like, he's just, I don't know, it's a big change in him. He just seems to be brilliant. And I would say him or Keith Watson for me. I think it was all about the defence for me last night. I just think the defence right now is absolutely brilliant. And I feel a lot more calm and secure when I'm like watching the games now. I feel like they've got the back line totally, totally solid. So I'll go with Keith Watson. I think he's been great the last few games as well.
Yeah, me too. I think the sponsored man of the match was Keith Watson last night as well. Mm-hmm. And I agree with that. I thought he was excellent, as you say, definitely. I mean, defence is on top for both sides, but absolutely very much back in his groove. As the whole defence appears to be. Just a quick one, actually, just to say, Lee Ashcroft apparently gets a scan on his hamstring tomorrow. So, you know, fingers crossed for that. It doesn't sound, just the kind of tone in which that's being discussed doesn't seem particularly optimistic, but hopefully that's just playing down expectations and that we will see him back before the end of the season. But time will tell, but I see, hopefully
somebody in the boardroom will be looking for the receipt.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm not sure there's much leeway in terms of how that will go, but you never know. But back to Man of the Match, Blair. Anyone for you?
I actually don't think anybody had a particularly bad game. I think it was one of those kind of performances where it just never turned into a football match. So it didn't really suit us. So anyone from the back four, I would think would have been justified. Middle two, I thought Sam Stanton was really good as well, actually. Really good to have him back. I actually think the way we cope with that game was a lot to do with him and doing that kind of midfield three roles in one kind of thing. But I have to agree with you guys. Keith Watson, for me, was the one player that I thought, actually, more than anybody else, stood out.
It's a good point you make there, actually. I don't think anybody played badly.
No one had a bad game.
No, there's, I mean, a couple
it
of guys,
it just wasn't
sure,
a good game of football.
No, it really wasn't. It was like across the board, just...
Even like Aidan Connolly, he worked so hard last night, Aidan Connolly. Unreal.
I thought he had quite a poor kind of 20 minutes or so. He lost the ball a few times. And then after maybe just before he got booked, he got kind of bodied a couple of times. And then he got booked and he was angry. And I was saying it to my mates, it's my favourite Aidan Connolly. Is angry Aidan Connolly. I love it. He's just like a wee ball of rage running about the place. He's great.
I think there was a couple of them like that on both sides before halftime. And I get the feeling that both managers, the entirety of their halftime team talk was, this game's got a red card in it. Make sure it's not you.
Yeah.
Because the second half, the sort of temper that was in the first half really dissipated, and that was about all it had. It was almost like just about every single player on both sides, just like a 6 out of 10, and just totally cancelled them. They cancelled everybody else out. Really nothing.
Worth kind of noting as well, I was going to say, I don't know, I kind of personally missed it. The boys I was with had mentioned it, but there seems to be a bit of bad blood between Imrie and Murray.
Between Emery and every single other person in the world.
Yeah. But apparently it started before, I missed it completely, but they were at each other before the game even kicked off. Apparently Emery was effectively over and in Murray's face. I mean, how much of that is kind of hyperbole from the other end of the ground, I don't know. But at the final whistle as well, I thought Emery was being a bit chippy. Was.
I mean, this is a quote from one of the Gallagher brothers about the other one, but I think it applies. It's Dougie Imrie is like a man with a fork in a world of soup. It's just
that's lovely.
See,
I would have went with he's a troll who lives under a bridge. It's not quite as poetic.
I don't know
he's
if that's
grumpy.
Almost
just a grumpy man who doesn't get his own way, and he just gets grumpier.
Because I mean, there wasn't anything to get upset about in that game. Yes, it didn't seem worthwhile. I don't know.
His interview, his post match interview was hilarious. He kind of looks a bit like a thumb, I've noticed. But he just, his interview was great. Absolute comic value because it had no bearing. Do you know something? There was a bit of me thinking, I was actually thinking about Carol last night, funnily enough, watching that interview. You know that thing about when the temperature at which Carol will put a jumper on is about the same temperature we'll go taps off. Like, you know that, how temperature is kind of dependent, right? Yeah. It's a relative. It's relative. So last night, they were talking about it on their YouTube channel or whatever as being a great performance. How bad have they been that is a great performance? Like, it's all relative, obviously. But watching them week in, week out, that they think that's good.
Well, that's because, I mean, again, like, they're 15 games unbeaten. So it's not like they're, like, I don't know if, I can't tell if Dougie Imrie thinks he's, like, playing mind games and it comes across terribly, or if he's just very, very thick. And I'm being kind enough to at least offer up that there's an option there.
I like to live in a world where both of those things are true.
I mean, there's something, I've not got the direct quote in front of me, but I mean, literally in the space, in like in a single breath in that interview, he says,
Ian Lattle picked up on it.
We just didn't have any opportunities. The opportunities were there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's worse than that.
He actually said, we didn't have any opportunities. I mean, as I say, there were opportunities.
That's exactly it.
It's like, what are you talking about?
What's happening? And as I say, like he's got this thing where he keeps going on about, people say we're big and physical, as like George Oakley's in the background, just like a hod full of bricks just going on. Like Robbie Muirhead's doing the Atlas stones and everything. Like,
if you watch his interview on Ton TV or whatever the hell they call it, Aidan Connolly actually walks up the sort of the side of the pitch past, because they're filming it effectively with his back to the dugout, on the sort of concourse area sort of thing. So you can see the pitch behind them, and Aidan Connolly walks along, and it reminded me of, you remember the Regan Tumulty when what's his name? That's escaped me now. That's terrible. He was a Rovers manager that left for Dundee United.
Ray McKinnon,
thank you. I couldn't think it. When Ray McKinnon was the Falkirk manager and he was getting interviewed, and Regan Tumulty's walking past him and just kind of shoots a look at the camera as if to say, what a knob, and keeps walking. And it is one of those moments, you can see Aidan Connolly walking along eating like a Greg sausage roll or something. And he's just peering over the side as if to say, what is he talking about?
Just a very
a dick.
uneventful game. And
I was going to say it was a really good foresight as well from the board to basically predict the value of the ticket before they sold it. So we know we can't sell this at £22, so we're going to offer it at a tenner because that's all it's worth.
Well, it was maybe a good thing that it was nearly like pay as you leave. Pay what you think that was. Because that, I mean, listen, I'll be the first to say, we've had some amount of value out of season tickets and everything this season.
We really have.
But that was a bit of a, there's a heavy kind of credit balance, but that was a wee debit transaction on it there.
Absolutely.
But actually, just before we go on to Friday night, Dundee United get beat. That was good.
Yay.
Our old pals Airdrie, who... They're nae good to us when they're playing us, but they're dead fine when they play other people. And I've no idea how they're not top of the league themselves, the results thing.
Did you see the Airdrie Air game, to be fair? That's why they're not top of the league, the defender in that game.
It's just the goalie's running about the place. Doesn't happen when they're playing us. But fortunately, also doesn't happen when they're playing at Tannadice. The Goodwin factor in full effect again, as so in his interview, he said that they played well for 6 or 7 minutes, which is nice.
He also said neither keeper had anything to do until they scored. I thought, well, he had something to do at that point, didn't he?
Yeah.
Just a good laugh, really.
It really is.
We'll see how that goes. But certainly, I would say, particularly with Morton's recent form, I think a game at home to Morton is ostensibly a little bit tougher than a game at home to Airdrie. So for us to take a point and then we get beat is handy. Also bear in mind, in the not too distant past, when they played Morton at home, they get beat quite handsomely. So again, that's nice for us, as it's a slightly better result than they had. So definitely, I mean, I think before that game last night, if you'd offered me a point, I would have been sorely tempted to take it. Mm-hmm. If you'd offered me a point with the guarantee that Dundee United were going to get beat, I'd have been over the moon. That's a good night's work for me.
Murray didn't seem pleased though, did he? In his interview, which I quite like. I mean, it would, because that narrative that you've just said there, that's the obvious thing that he could have said. Like, you know, at any point in the championship's a good point. A point at home to a side that's 15 games unbeaten is a good point. You know, Dundee United losing makes it a really good point. And he actually says it's a missed opportunity. We could have been top of the league.
That's what specifically what he said to that, is that Dundee United getting beat softens the blow of dropped points, which again, he's thinking about himself first and foremost. And
I like
that. It probably is the right attitude. But that does take us into Friday night. Because it's all well and good, you know, winning two big games and then, you know, drawing a difficult game at home. You've then got to go to the team who are bottom of the league, marooned at the bottom of the league, if you'll pardon that pun, and just being hammered 6-0 by Queen's Park. Whoa, that gives you a nice, confident feeling, doesn't it? Christina, let's come to you first of all. You're normally quite optimistic. So how do you feel about the fact that Rovers are going to Gayfield on a Friday night? They say the weather's going to be fine. I don't believe it. It never has been.
No.
What are your thoughts going into this one?
I know, I've never been to Gayfield yet. I'm not going on Friday, so I'm yet to experience that one. I am confident, actually, for Friday. I did think, after winning on Saturday, I was thinking, okay, Tuesday, I'm happy with a draw, as long as we then win on the Friday. But I am confident. I think we will. I think, I'm assuming that Burn possibly can come back for Friday. Mm-hmm. So
should be back.
I think, yeah, so I think also Ruddin, I'm thinking he's, last night, a few of those players, in my opinion, he played them last night because he wasn't going to play them on Friday. Like, I know he's obviously going to have thought ahead. So I think he's saved certain key players for Friday who are going to be fresh. Mullen as well being one of them. I am confident. I think we're going to... I'll take 7 points from 9. Would that make it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Yeah, I would take that. Happy with that.
Yeah.
And I would try and... I know what you're saying about Ian Murray saying that it's a missed opportunity, but I was trying not to think about Dundee United in this and just focus on us. So if we just focus on us and think 7 points from 9, it's just a bit frustrating that that's what happened last night. But, and then who's to say Dundee United aren't going to lose on, is it Saturday they play again?
Put Patrick Thistle on Saturday, yeah.
Here's hoping. I think come Saturday we will be top of the league.
Good. I would be happy with that, definitely. Carol, anyone in particular that you would like to see come back into the starting lineup, or anyone in particular you'd like to see kind of hold on to their place?
I think I'm going to pick up on Murray's frustration. I think what I was frustrated with the game last night is that Rovers are fitter than Morton, so they should be faster and they should have broken off the ball. And I think that was where Vaughan was missing, but physically he would have just got beaten to a pulp. So I'd quite like to see Ruddon and Vaughan back front, because I think this is, oh, I'm going to regret saying this, I think this could be our the one, or the more than one, where we could might actually
it.
Get,
don't
we
say
might
it.
Actually do something.
Oh, she said it.
No, I think that we have to come out attacking. We have to come out attacking and finish them early, because it's a heavy pitch and we're going to be sore from Tuesday. Is we have to come out and finish them off early. So, yeah, I'm with Christina. I can see us being the top of the league Saturday morning. Saturday afternoon, we'll see how it goes. But, yeah, I can definitely see us being Saturday morning.
And, Blair, thinking back to the last game at Gayfield, Ian Murray, a bit of a kind of tactical change, if I remember rightly. That was he played a kind of front two in that one. It was Jamie Gullen and Callum Smith. Mm-hmm. Do you think he'll do anything kind of similar for this one? Do you think it'd be kind of two strikers? And
yeah.
Who do you think that might be?
So I really do. That game was the one that Jack Hamilton came ill before the game. So he started Jack Hamilton, but then before kickoff, Jamie Gullen ended up being put in. I actually go back to the pre-match for the Morton game. It was John Greer was talking about Ruddon and Hamilton together. And it was funny because in my head, I was thinking, I wouldn't do it Tuesday. I'd be saving that for Friday. I think that's definitely where we could get a bit of joy. So I think I'd like to see those two. I think there's going to have to be a bit of acceptance that we're not going to be playing pretty football on Friday night. I think it's going to be a bit kind of blood and thunder and a bit of being a bit more direct. But actually, I'd love to see Hamilton and Ruddon together. Hamilton's aerial ability and his ability to knock the ball down, and Ruddon's ability to just run. Like, he noises folk up, but not in the way I thought he was going to. When I talked about him first coming in, thinking he was going to noise folk up, he's physical and all the rest of it, he just is relentless. He just never stops, never gives you a breathing space at all. So I'd quite like to see those two together. I think Mullen's the one I'm not sure about. Like I say, I'm not sure whether the pitch would suit him, but his delivery into those two could be kind of crucial. So I mean, I imagine Vaughan will probably come back in. I can't imagine him starting our top scorer on the bench twice, two games in a row. But I'm not really sure how that would work. I think I'd prefer to see the two big boys together, but yeah, wait and see.
Did you see the goals that are both conceded to Queen's Park?
To be fair, the goals that they conceded is the best way you can put that, because saying that it's the goals that Queen's Park scored, I think, is a bit over the top.
The last two in particular, horrific. I mean, just our luck, Blair, especially you and me, because we're both big fans of this guy, but they'll have to bring Derek Gaston back in, surely.
They have to. Why has he not been playing? Is he just tactically dropped him?
I think he was injured at one point, and right. Then they brought in Max Boric, I think, from Hibs on loan.
He must be a relation to Arthur Boric then, is he?
I think so. Based only on the fact they have the same surname, I actually have no idea.
Yeah, that's probably Smith and both goalkeepers.
It would be a coincidence if nothing else. But he's been playing recently because I think that Ali Adams, where do I know that name from? I think he came in, he played once.
He did,
by all accounts. But he also just falls out with everybody all the time.
Well, he's been told to find a new club this week, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly. They've punted them. which says a lot when your goalkeeper can score worldies from 30 yards and still kind of keep a hold of a contract. So they've bumped him. They've been playing this boy Boric instead. But I'd say anybody listening, if you haven't seen it, have a look at those goals, because there's some wild goalkeeping in them. But the thing
is, it's not just the goalkeeping. The sixth goal, why does the defender not at any point tackle him? He just shepherds him into the middle and lets him shoot.
Yeah.
After the goalkeeper's already out the road, to be fair. But
and I mean, he's really out the road by the end. It's like the most obvious big swing drop of the shoulder you'll ever see. And he sold the entire thing. But the first four, goals were really the ones I was actually more kind of thinking about, because it's all just running in behind. And I think that's where Zach Rudden might be able to get a fair bit of change, as you say, especially with Jack Hamilton kind of flicking on and playing these little balls around the corner. But you're never going to get an easy game. I say that, I know they just get beat 6-0, but we are not going to get
you're
going to
get the reaction, aren't you?
Aye, like, exactly.
And nobody gets beat 6-0 2 weeks in the trot. Like,
no, I think they get beat 6-0 early in the season, and the game after that they would get beat 3-1. So I mean, I would take that if it was on offer.
I'll take 1-0 now, I'm telling you, right,
hands
now.
Down,
just give me 1-0. I'd take it,
absolutely. I'd take that. Either one of the goalies chucking one in would be absolutely fine. I'd be quite happy with that.
A Dabrowski wonder goal just for revenge, just because.
Oh,
can't.
No, I'm not there. That was. I'm not going to run on the pitch when that happens. Save
listen,
that
that's
for
the chance
pack.
You take.
Yes.
And to be fair, if ever he was ever going to do it anywhere, you know, Gayfield's a decent chance with the amount of wind that you get. You've got a better chance there than anywhere else.
Right, that's it. I'm going to get a ticket.
Great.
Should be good though. Should be decent. It'll be a good atmosphere. It is a very good ground to watch the football at. I mean, the atmosphere was decent early in the season, Blair. I know you and I were both there. It must have been was it a Tuesday night or a Wednesday night.
Was it? Yeah.
And I think you'd expect to have a bigger travelling support for this one than there was then. I'm not sure my heart could take quite as dramatic a finish, but at the same time,
it was glorious.
I wouldn't be complaining about it. Live on the telly as well, so anybody who's not able to make it will still get to see this one. And it'll be interesting to see how that one goes. But let's just move along. Let's move along to our final segment for tonight, and it's the return of Blair's Game. Which will from this point forth no longer be known as Blair's Game, and because I think Blair, you have a winner. You've got
I do.
You've picked a victor for the competition to name the game.
I have, and I wish I'd thought of this about 10 seconds ago, and I could have looked up the boy's name because I've completely forgotten. But so it was one of the replies. I'm just going to buy myself some time here with some words. It was one of the replies on Twitter, and it genuinely made me chuckle out loud. And there were a few quite funny ones, but it was Ian Wallace on Twitter. So I'm going to reach out to Ian and ask him which mug he would like. But this game from now on shall be known as Should Mick Stay or Should Dar Go?
which is good. Just I do like chuckle. It's really good.
And we're going to get a jingle made. It's happening. I mean, it's a song, right? So you've got to. It writes itself.
The wheels are in motion for that already. And I was going to say eagle-eyed listeners. That doesn't make sense. The eagle-eared? The ears? Eagle-eared. The eagles have ears? I don't know. listeners might remember that the initial kind of idea for the game was it was kind of winner stays on, but Robbie just couldn't bring himself to talk about Greenock Morton. So he handed that baton over to me for this evening. So I'm gonna assume the role of quizmaster for this one. So I have 7 clues written down, and I may improv further ones if I have to, which will reveal the identity of a Raith Rovers player, past or present. And the idea should be that they get progressively more obvious. So we'll see with this. Blair, keep me right if I transgress on any of these rules. But basically, if I remember rightly, you can lock in a guess. You can sort of bid a guess at any point. And ultimately, the person who has stuck with their guess the longest, stuck with the earliest guess, that person will win. Are we ready?
We are.
All right, excellent. Right, guess number one. Your brain's really worrying. I am Scottish.
Blair.
Would you like to lock in a guess, Blair?
I would. I think you're Eddie Malone.
All right. Interesting.
He's Scottish.
He is. Carol, would you like to walk in, I guess, or are you happy?
I'm happy to pass. I think I'll leave that to the next clue.
Yeah, pass right, for the next enough. Clue.
Odds see if are, anybody probably. Tweets the show and says, I got this on the first guess, you can raffle. Unless it's Eddie Malone.
you might have to walk that back. Right, clue number two. If you thought that left it too open, clue number two is going to narrow it by about 0.4%. I also played for Hearts.
Oh.
So we need a Scottish Hearts player, please, who also, of course, played for Raith Rovers.
Christina?
Blair.
Yes, Christina.
Ross Callaghan?
Ross Callaghan, okay. Where were you coming in there to?
Yeah, to be fair, you've narrowed it down. You've actually made it wider. There's probably more players that have played for Raith Rovers and Hearts than there are Scottish people. I'll go with Jamie Walker.
Jamie Walker, all right. Carol, at this point, are you prepared to enter the fray?
I'm just going to go Colin Cameron because...
All right.
Because you can.
Because why not?
Exactly.
Excellent. Right, okay. Clue number three. I played more than 100 games for the Rovers.
Blair.
Yep.
I'm beginning to think it's Ross Callaghan.
You changing your guess? Are you joining team Christina?
I'm gonna go Ross Callaghan, yeah.
Not sure I would stand for that if I was you, Christina, but I don't think we've not added any rules to say that he can't do that up to this point, conveniently in the game that he invented.
Oh, actually, no, that's really stupid, because if it is him, I'm not going to win anyway, so I might as well have a stab on somebody else, eh? Right, so I'll go 100 games for the Rovers and played for Hearts at some point. There should be loads of these as well. I'll go Jason Thompson.
All right, okay. Right, next one. I made my Rovers debut in the same game as Gregory Taddy made his Rovers debut. Should have said, Christina, you're at a real disadvantage with this, having only been watching the Rovers for about 3 years. And that's
I'm
the
just
one
going
that...
to stick with Ross Callaghan for all, because that's all I've got.
Timestamps. that's as close as you'll get to kind of time stamping that.
Blair.
Yep.
My favourite Rovers player ever, I'm going to guess Bobby Sloan.
All right, okay. Having said that, would you like the next clue?
Yeah.
I played most of my games for the Rovers in defence.
Oh, man. Oh, man, this is going to annoy me now.
I'm currently racking my brain at the 2009.
Right, do you want the next guess? Next clue, sorry.
Yeah.
I scored in a derby against Dunfermline. People at home are getting this now. I think that's the one where that's people get that. And Blair. I tell you this, Blair. Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to regret this. Grant Murray?
Okay. I was going to say, when I give you the seventh one, you will get it. So, Carol, Christina, any advances?
Nope.
All right.
No pressure, Blair.
Grant Murray even play for Hearts? I don't know if he did. Kelly?
Clue number seven. I also managed.
This is going to be really embarrassing, isn't it?
I also managed Raith Rovers.
Ah.
But you've just made me really, really doubt. Grant Murray must have played for Hearts.
He did.
Oh, dearie me. You absolutely struck the fear into me there. I thought
it was,
it was in my head.
Moment. I'm like, he played at Hearts under McGlynn, I think. I think that was the link initially that effectively made him come to the Rovers.
There must have been some kind of relationship there, aye.
Yeah. But it was in, you know, when you associate a player with a club, and I'm like, I think he played for Hearts, but I know he played for Kelly, like, because he was a Kelly guy. Grant
Murray.
Well,
see, one of the other clues that I was considering for this was about a guy who I assume is his brother. Hugh Murray played for St Mirren for years, because they look almost identical. I can't find any evidence at all to say that they're brothers on the internet.
Well, maybe they're not then. I always thought they were as well.
I just assume they were. They look, I just say, so similar.
I can text him if you like. I've got his number.
All right, okay.
I love Grant Murray. Another,
can you text him on the first five quiz, could you?
Another very, very handsome man. We have had some handsome men.
You like the chiseled jaw, don't you, Blair?
Oh,
unless it's Goodwin. Unless it's Goodwin, because he just looks like a really bad Hallmark Santa.
I think it's clearly being a handsome guy gets you into the mind of people when we're coming up with answers for this. But
worth pointing out as well, for anybody young enough to have not seen the goal that Grant Murray scored against Dunfermline, and I don't know how you've not seen it, but look it up. Oh,
he hadn't scored in an inordinate amount of time. He hadn't scored a goal in something like 4 or 5 seasons. And then unlike Scott Brown's goal.
Yeah. Kind of half volley though, wasn't it?
Like he kind of takes it on the chest, and it's one of these where actually his first touch almost lets him down a little bit. Like he takes it on the chest and it's running away from him. And so he decides he's just going to hit it.
And what
a hit it is. It's an absolute beauty.
And he's an inverse Scott Brown that day as well, because he was a centre-half through and through, but he played defensive midfield that day.
Yeah. That was a very good game. Because that was the first goal in the Castle Nova game, wasn't it?
It was, aye. The save from Davy McGurn, who pushed it out wide. Darren Smith picks it up. Bombs up the left-hand side. Darren Smith, still, in my opinion, the best part-time footballer in Scotland at that point. He was brilliant. Bombs up the left, whips it in, Castle and Ovo. Oh.
Just one of these right in front of that stand.
Oh, yeah.
Aye.
In the stand, it was glorious. Glorious.
And what a note to end this episode on. Given we started so downbeat and fed up after that, with very little to talk about, that's a much nicer note to end on. So thank you to everybody for listening and watching. I hope you've enjoyed that wee round of that game. That will definitely come back, and we'll get somebody else to be the quiz master. So do get in touch. Let us know if you got Grant Murray quicker than this lot did. And you really, really had me worried that he hadn't played for Hearts. It was like the one bit of that I didn't fact check, because I was so confident in it. And
I was really hoping it was going to be Eddie Malone. That would have been so funny.
Somebody out there will have got that too quickly for us to believe them. And I'm going to tell you right now, if you do get in touch and tell us you got that in one of the first two,
we're not going to believe you.
But, thanks for playing. Right, okay. As I say, thank you for listening. We will see you up at Arbroath on Friday night. There will be a podcast to follow that at some point over the weekend. Not entirely sure when yet, but it will be there. And the better the result, the quicker we'll get together to record and talk about it. So we will see you then. Goodbye.